So, we will review yesterday's discussion by this little example. If I were to go to an optometrist, an eye doctor, and tell him that I'm having some trouble with my eyes, right? Maybe I think I need glasses. And so, he takes off his glasses and he says, "Try these on." Okay? So I take them and I try them on and I say, "God, I can't see a darn thing." And he says, "Actually, you know," he says, "well, think positively. Think positively." And I say, "Well, I positively can't see a thing." And then he becomes more and more upset. He calls me ungrateful for all the work that he's done for me. Like that. So that's basically what we discussed yesterday. We take on other people's problems, and not only that, but we see them through our own experience without caring a darn for what they're experiencing. And often we give them our solution. In the material world, it's like there's how many people on this planet? 4 billion? Almost 2 billion of them are just between India and China. But everyone is sort of living in their own little bubble. And it makes communication in Kali Yuga very difficult. Because we've rejected Krishna, we've naturally become self-centered. And, yeah, in one place, Prabhupada calls it like everyone's just orbiting around their own little society, children, house, family, country, everyone's just going in their own little orbit. And there's 4 billion people on this planet, all in their own little orbits. Or you could see it like this, that every one of us is going through our own drama. And in each and every one of our dramas, we're the lead character. And everyone else, at best, has a little supporting role, right? But we're definitely the lead character. So with 4 billion people running around the planet, all having their own dramas, all orbiting around their own little, all in their own little bubbles, it makes communication very difficult. But still, regardless of that, communication is needed. Especially as devotees, as compassionate people trying to develop compassion, teachers, preachers, we meet gurus, temple presidents, parents, husbands, wives. We need to do our best, despite all the problems in Kali Yuga, to communicate better. So, we discussed what not to do yesterday, so we're going to discuss a little about what to do today. Now, if you remember our diagram, this was we had unacceptable behavior and acceptable behavior. Now, when the other person owns the problem, in your acceptable and unacceptable, where does that fall? The other person owns the problem. It's not your problem, it's someone else's. My word. Acceptable. This is very important to understand. We can accept that another person has a problem. It doesn't tangibly and concretely affect us. So therefore, we're going to be using, we could say, we'll be communicating with the language of acceptance. Now, it's very important to make a distinction. We may not agree. Right? Like in yesterday's thing, I might have thought that Mayapur's idea that he wanted to go to another temple was a terrible idea. Right? But because it's not unacceptable to me, right? I can accept it even if I don't even if I disagree with it. I suspend my own opinion about it because it's not my problem. And in order to help him, in order to influence him in the best way, I'm not going to be using the same methods I would if it was my problem. Is that clear? Yes? Does anyone not follow this? Okay. We have to get serious here. We better shut the door. Oh no, we better not shut the door. It's getting dark in here. Okay. Because the other person's behavior, right? We said we can, like, if Mayapur wants to go to another temple, does that tangibly and concretely affect me? No. How would it? If I was his temple president. Right, this brings up actually another point, separate, and that is that it seems like in our society, it would be, this is off the off that I have planned for today, but just to briefly say, it seems like it would be very nice in our society if we had a certain division of labor between managers and counselors, because often there's a conflict of interest. Right? You go to your temple president because you're having some problem. Maybe the best solution actually is for you to go to another temple or take a year's break and go to India. But the manager also says, wow, this guy's collecting the most money in the temple. So he has some conflict of interest there. Your best interest and the interests of the temple that he's trying to serve on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. So that brings up a separate point. But especially for me, my position here in Vrindavan, you know, it doesn't tangibly and concretely at all affect me that Mayapur may want to go to another. I hate to keep on using, but it just came from they want to go. So I can accept that he wants to do it, even if I disagree with it in my own mind. That's another point. And actually, that's also the difference between sympathy and empathy, but we'll be getting to that in a minute. So we have to show acceptance of another person when they have a problem. Now, if he's doing something unacceptable to me, if he decides in a minute to jump up and scream at the top of his lungs and say, the DIG is a waste of time, everyone immediately get out before you become contaminated for your entire life, then it becomes my problem. And I have to say, shut up! Or I have to do something. Then I'm not going to use the language of acceptance. It's my problem, and I have to do something directly about it. What we're going to do directly about it, that we'll discuss in the beginning of next week. Mother Rahim? Yes. No. It's, no, we're talking more... Shastra guides our life, but in terms of our own thing, we discussed this the other day, it's in those handouts, but just in general, what would be acceptable behavior to you and what would be unacceptable behavior to you? And that will often be guided by Shastra, but not exclusively. Okay, so, now, when a person has a problem, often there's some clues. And I think all of us, this doesn't take any, you know, PhD in psychology to figure this out. You see a devotee or a friend of yours daydreaming a lot, or as Prabhupada said, the face is the index of the mind. You can often see when a person is discouraged or distraught, unhappy about something. They may be very sarcastic, more than usual, or you just see somebody, you know, kind of like, slouching in a chair, whereas usually they're, you know, quite full of energy, and right, these are non-verbal things that indicate that there's something going on in their mind. Or they're very irritable, you know, you just knock on the door, like that. Or sometimes that's a little, you know, more on the just behavioral side, or externally, but also someone may say it, something like in ISKCON, we have the famous saying, which I'd rather not see in this gun anymore, that I'm pride. Right? That's another class. We give a class on public speaking. We talk about that. Or someone comes up to Prabhu, I just got to get out of here and go to India. That's another indication, maybe, that there's some difficulty. Or, you know, you're trying to talk to somebody, and then just out of the blue, they say, oh, just forget it. It's a different things either people say, or in their bodily expressions, we see that there's some problem. Okay, they have a problem. Okay. So what are we going to do? Now, how many of you did the homework last night? Read all, I gave you a lot of reading to do. Okay, everyone, please do it tonight. If you didn't finish it, I know it was, I guess, it wasn't that much, it was about 20 pages of reading. Okay, so there's four stages of listening, or the language of acceptance, that we're going to discuss today. Now we're getting right into the practical do's and do nots. Okay, you should have the, without, what we're teaching now is useless without that real, that crucial understanding of whose problem it is. Once you have that clearly in your mind, that's why we've spent practically almost 2 days on it. Now we get to the, you know, real practical do's and do nots. So, what's the first thing that we can do? It's a little different, these four, than what you see in the book, but it's pretty similar. We can, what they call door openers. These are listed on page 24 in your handout. You know, something like, you see somebody distraught, would you like to tell me about it? I'd like to hear more about it. Go ahead, I'm listening. It seems really important to you. These are listed there. You can encourage the person, if they like, to talk about it. And now again, to review, we always have to, you know, we're not doing this for any manipulative ends. We're doing this solely and wholly in service to our spiritual master and Krishna, and to try to help the other person. Okay, it's such an important point to have the proper heart of a devotee. Because we're teaching techniques, and like I said, techniques are empty without Krishna consciousness. But with Krishna consciousness, they can be very helpful. Okay, that's pretty simple. We can try to encourage them to speak about it. Second one, passive listening. This is discussed on page 22 of your handout. We give there the soul, right? S-O-L-E. Okay. First, the S stands for squarely. That's a kind of posture. You know, in other words, if I'm talking to Mahaprabhu, I'm like this instead of like this, right? I'm actually facing the person. Okay. O is an open posture. There's many books, even actually the Vedas talk about this, about bodily language. And this is a real no-no, right? Open posture. Squarely looking at the person is much better. Then L is for leaning. Right? Like here, Sunil is leaning towards me, so it looks like he's really listening carefully. Right? And it's quite different. So you can imagine that if all these things are the right things to do, this would be the wrong thing to do. Right? You have your arms crossed, you're not leaning, and you're looking out the window instead of at the person. Okay? It gives a complete different mood than if you're like this. Okay. And E is eye contact. I understand from talking to devotees from different cultures that this differs a little bit. In some countries, it's unusual for people to maintain eye contact, especially if there's a superior and a younger person like that. But is that true, Mother Gita Govinda, in Japan? People don't look at each other so much in the eye? Yeah, I thought so. Where's Lakshman? Is he here today? Is that true in China also? Okay. So according to the culture of the person you're talking to, that may differ a little bit, but some eye contact is very helpful. I mean, a good speaker will always do that in a class. You know, at least for a second, maintain eye, you know, contact. It's hard sometimes to listen to a class with the speakers like this the whole time. And the third one, is giving some kind of acknowledgement. Well, another non-verbal one that's really helpful is just things like nodding your head and to show that you're actually listening to the person you're following what they're saying. Acknowledgements, these are on page 24. Just simple things, really, I see. Or one of the best ones is, Where is Faye here? Is Faye here? Faye, do you know Nikatma Prabhu? The book distributor? His best line on Sangirtan was, he would say, no kidding. He had this amazing way of just like listening to a person for a little while, and he just win them over, and then they just like buy a book. Anyway, they're listed here, no fooling, interesting, some indication that we are hearing what they have to say. Okay. Now all three of these, they convey some willingness to hear, okay? But they don't convey that you actually understand what the person is saying. You see the difference? They show that you're willing to hear, you're there and you're listening, but they don't necessarily show that you understand. And therefore, the fourth principle in listening, which we're going to spend by far the most amount of time on, is, I think it's in your books, it's called Responding with Understanding, or just to give another title, there's so many different ways it's explained, but active listening. Or sometimes it's also called empathic listening. And in your book, we coined the phrase listening with understanding. Okay? And this is a very... That means it takes work. We spend so many years in school learning to write, so in different ways of communication, reading, writing, and speaking especially. But how much time in school do we actually learn to listen to other people? It's amazing how little of education is spent on this. So that's why I was saying that we're actually, this is where the real change of habits that I spoke about, the first thing I said in this class, how I said this class is the hardest class in the Institute. Because we're going to actually work at listening, and it takes one's full attention, one's full mental energy to actually do it properly and sincerely. Okay? So let's describe a little bit about what this active listening is. It could best be explained by a little diagram. So a person has some problem. Here's a person with a problem. And my artistic abilities are ever increasingly good. what's he going to say? Okay. He's experiencing some hunger. For those of you who skipped breakfast today to get here on time, I guess you can appreciate this. Okay? Now, often what happens is a person puts that into some kind of code. Now, this is a very simple thing, I'm hungry. So often a person will just say, hey, I'm hungry. Then it's not very difficult to figure out what's going on in his mind or in his body, right? But often what we'll say is something like, When is prasadam around here? Right? Don't say, you don't just go out and say, I'm hungry. But when's prasad? Now, what time do they serve prasadam here? Or what's for prasadam today? Or how much time until prasad? Or what time is it? Right? A typical thing. Prasadam? In code, E-N-C-O-D-E. And then, so this is, we'll call him the sender. And this is us. None of us are hungry. We're the receiver.
The I before E, except after me.
So we have to decode that. It's the simple one I'm talking about. All right, so we say, if someone says, when's prasadam? Well, we figure that this person's hungry. Right? That's us. Here. And we say something like, sounds like you are hungry. Did we get it right?
Yep.
It's a real simple one, okay? But this is the basic idea, that a person expresses some kind of emotion, but oftentimes they put it into some kind of code. We do it all the time. We'll give more and more examples of this so it becomes clear. And we have to use empathy. We have to try to really completely put aside. Remember what we were saying in the beginning, that so many times people have conversations. I know this happens all the time in preaching. We're having, say, a debate with somebody, or a disagreement with somebody on some kirtan or at a book table or something. And we're spending the entire time, while they're speaking, thinking of what we're going to say next. Right? Instead of actually listening to what they have to say. This is, by the way, the worst thing to do in debating. Because almost inevitably, especially because we're preaching Krishna consciousness, which is practically faultless philosophy, they're going to come up with some logical fallacy, some mistake in reasoning. And if we're always thinking about what we're going to say next, we're going to completely miss it, completely miss our opportunity. Okay. So, in active listening, we're putting aside all of that. And we're giving our complete energy into hearing the other person. And the hard part about it, and the most important part about it, is we're not only hearing what they have to say, but the emotion behind it. This is the key. We're listening so carefully to hear what is the emotion behind what they have to say. In what category does this problem lie under? So therefore, we've listed on what page? All those emotions? On the bottom of page 25. Now really, what I usually like to do is not let you look at page 25 and go around the room and ask you to list emotions, ask you to just name emotions, because I find that we're not really in the practice of doing this, to think about other people's emotions. So we won't take that time now. It's about a 20-minute exercise where you go around and ask everyone to just come up with different emotions. But I want you to study this carefully. These are different. Of course, this is not the full spectrum. Yes, this is the one that you... This is not the full spectrum. Anger, jealousy, these are the negative ones. Inadequacy, fear, cynicism, rejection, doubt, alienation, frustration, sadness, bewilderment, misery, confusion, defiance, disappointment, neglect, hurt, hopeless, unprotected, sense of being cheated, sense of unfairness. These are some of many different negative emotions that a person could be feeling. Need one more. And of course there's also positive ones, because we'll listen to somebody when they're not having a problem also, which also can be very helpful for that person. But it's interesting that we came up with a lot less in the positive. I guess that shows Krishna's, what is he, certifies this world, right? Anityam asukam loka. temporary, and asukam, full of no sukha, no happiness. But anyway, sometimes people do feel happiness, elation, excitement, enthusiasm, being loved, trusted, responsibility, relief, hope, confidence, satisfaction, pleasure, and I'm sure if we went around the room we could find more. Okay? So what we're doing is when a person sends us some message that shows that they're having some problem, we are first of all trying to empathize with them. Trying to empathize in simple terms means putting ourselves in their shoes. Okay, really try putting aside all of our own, you could say, our own autobiographies. You know, we gave the example at the beginning of the class, giving them our glasses and say, here, try these on. They work for me. Right? Doesn't that always happen? Someone, oh, I've had that problem before. I know exactly what you're going through. Putting all of that aside and just hearing and trying to understand as deeply as we can what they're going through. This takes a, for most of us, this takes a complete shift of thinking. But when you're dealing with someone else's problem, this is required. When you're dealing with your own problem, we'll talk about that on Thursday, it's completely different. Okay, that's why this distinction is so essential, always. Whose problem is it? Because we're going to deal with it completely differently. Okay, but we need to develop this shift of mentality when we're dealing with other people who have difficulty. And this will be the way to help them. So there's three steps in active listening, in replying to someone who has a problem. The first one is to identify the emotion of that person. Okay? Now the second one, that's the hardest, by the way. That's the thing we need to do the most work on. The second one is, what is the cause of that emotion? C-A-U-S-E. And it should be tangible. Okay? Tangible, concrete. Okay? But not, it sounds like, you know, not like you're feeling sad because you're really unhappy. That's not tangible. You're feeling upset because you missed out on prasadam. Right? Or you're feeling very hungry because you missed out on prasadam. Okay? Sounds like you're feeling hungry because you missed out on prasadam. So there's the emotion. Well, the hungry, I guess, isn't much of an emotion. No. The cause of the emotion is they missed out on prasadam. And you could, in this case, it's not much of an emotion, but hunger. And then, especially in the beginning, because as you, just like, you know, you have training wheels when you learn to ride a bicycle. So similarly, these are very helpful ways to begin when you're first learning to act with listening. Begin with something like, seems to me, I think these are listed here, on the top of page 26. It seems to me, it sounds like you, what I understand you're saying is something like that. Okay. So let's see, should we take someone's phone? Well, again, with my, of course, problem again. Okay. Let's say we felt that he was feeling discouraged. And what's the cause of his discouragement? The situation at the temple, presently. Okay, so I might say something like, sounds to me like, you know, you're really discouraged because of the present situation at Soho Street. Okay, did you hear that? Oh. Sounds to me like you're really feeling discouraged right now with the present situation at your temple. Okay, now, is that any of those 12 roadblocks? It's not a question. It's almost like a mystical thing. It's not a question, but he's going to answer it yes or no. Did just as it was, it's a statement. It's we talk about this a little on page 26. It's not an evaluation. It's not a judgment about whether it's right or wrong for him to be discouraged. It's not an interpretation. I'm not trying to psychoanalyze it. I'm not challenging him. Yes, it's seeking confirmation. It's almost saying, like, do I understand that? Do I have this right? And it does some amazing things. Now, you won't find this in any psychology book, but I thought of this, and I really think it's in order to active listen, one really has to be in the mode of goodness. Definitely. The mode of passion means your mind starts thinking about so many other things that you have to do, or starts thinking of answers, or starts thinking that, God, you know, it's so late, what am I doing here? Right? Or so many things like that. One really has to be situated in the mode of goodness just to hear what the other person has to say. And what is a symptom of the mode of goodness? Sattva sanjayate jnanam. From the mode of goodness, knowledge comes. So if the listener, if we're in the mode of goodness when we're hearing somebody else, it brings them, it helps uplift them. They associate with someone in the mode of goodness, they come to the mode of goodness, and sattva sanjayate jnanam. Then, it's so many times you'll find by using this process, the other person solves their own problems. Because by coming to the mode of goodness, it comes jnanam, comes knowledge. And you'll see so often, it's not that we have to be great psychologists and really get into, but just by listening, putting aside our own autobiographies, and using our empathy and trying to understand the emotions that they're feeling, and use these techniques. So many times, just by that alone, people solve their own problems. And if it doesn't always, and it doesn't always do that, it certainly fosters it develops the relationship between you and the other person. But it's obviously not that every time you talk to someone using active listening, firecrackers start going off, and people say, "You've saved me." You know, not like that. But it's also just like putting another brick on a relationship that you're trying to build up with someone. Or sometimes you could compare it to we have with every person that we know. You could say we have like a bank account with them, an emotional bank account. And you can either put deposits in it or you can withdraw it. Like say you promise somebody you're going to do something and you don't show up, that's a big withdrawal. Right? You lose your interest and everything, right? And this kind of thing, trying to actually understand someone and what's going on inside them, that's a big deposit. It increases trust in the guru-disciple relationship, increases surrender, it fosters, and there's a nice letter I'm going to photocopy for all of you. One of my favorite letters Srila Prabhupada's written to Kurandar Prabhu. And where Srila Prabhupada is talking about how it's the leader's responsibility to see to the ever-fresh enthusiasm of the devotees underneath him. You know that? I am just paraphrasing it. That there's so much in that letter.
Ever-new challenge.
Right. And so when there's this kind of trusting relationship, I was just talking to a devotee yesterday. He's going to a university, a mundane university. But he said that this one teacher that he has for Sanskrit is so expert that he said, although he wants to get good grades, because he wants to get a good degree and, you know, get a PhD and preach in Krishna consciousness with his doctorate, he actually has a mood of wanting to please that person. So this is also an expert teacher, an expert authority in any situation where the love and the trust and the relationship is so strong, the emotional bank account is full of so much money that the person actually acts out of wanting to please that person. So this can help foster that. Again, not devoid of Krishna consciousness, but with Krishna consciousness, this kind of technique can help foster those kind of feelings. Now, before I take questions, I just want to go over one or two more things, and then I know that I'm sure there'll be some questions. Bhakti Robert, where is it? Do you remember our discussion the other day in my room? How did you feel about that discussion? Seriously, candidly.
I felt encouraged by that conversation, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you recognize? Do you remember? I didn't give you any advice at all, actually, right until the very end. Robert came to me in a little anxiety. Well, I can bring it up because it's not like some major personal thing. But he was a little concerned that he had taken too many courses and that he wasn't able to. He had just finished one test where he didn't think he did so well on because he didn't really take the time to go over his notes again and again. So he was feeling that maybe he should take one or two less courses, right? And that way, you know, actually learn the ones that he was taking more thoroughly. He was asking me if that was all right. So, you know, if I was in a rush, I was reading up on all this and practicing, so I thought, okay, I better practice what I'm preaching here. So I took out the time, I stopped everything I was doing. Did you feel like I was giving you...
Yeah, I felt like that you had plenty of time.
I had no time, actually. But I made plenty of time. I mean, I decided... You know, there's a million other things I could have done, but I had to consciously say, okay, I'm not going to worry about those other things. Even Brajacharya, my devotee I worked with, we have a little divider in a room, and he was just behind the divider working on the computer, but at the same time listening. And he said afterwards, I can't believe how much time you spent with him. Like that. But I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything, but I'm just, like you saying that you felt good about it.
Yeah, I certainly didn't feel that you had any rush, and that didn't come across at all.
Mm-hmm. And you felt satisfied with the conclusion of it?
Yeah, I think I had the conclusion as well.
Hmm. Right, actually you came up with the same. You came up with the conclusion, and I felt like I kind of confirmed it. It was the same thing I was thinking. Now, let me give you another example. I was talking to another devotee yesterday who was really feeling discouraged. He had been serving in one temple for many years. Actually, he was the leader of the temple. And after he left, some devotees were, you know, saying bad things about him. And other devotees were writing him and saying, you know, begging him to come back because the new administration was no good. And so he was getting all different kinds of feelings. And as I was going on listening to him, so many, you know, things came out. And he was saying how devotees are so harsh in our society and there's not enough, you know, kindness. And he was telling me some survey that Sridhar Maharaj had told him that ISKCON has the highest spiritual standard faculty of any spiritual society in the world, but the devotees are most cruel to one another, more than any other religion. And he was really distraught about it. He was very concerned. So I was active listening, and mainly I didn't have to say, actually mainly in this conversation I probably spoke about 4% of the time, and he spoke 96% of the time. But this was different than with Robert. With Robert was kind of a simple thing, and I really tried to just put myself in his shoes and feel, but I didn't want to be completely empathic with this person, because actually in my own heart I didn't agree with him. Same time, I'd like to develop a relationship with him, and it sounded like he really wanted to get it off his chest, right? But you know how there's different stages in Krishna consciousness, thinking, feeling, and willing? So, in the last sentences that I wrote up this, I've got a second handout here, I gave some warning. So I'd say that we can always have the thinking, we can always come to the thinking stage when we're listening to other people, to hear them and understand it. At least we can do this successfully, even just like intellectually understanding. But I felt that I didn't want to emotionally completely put myself in this person's shoes, because I don't think like that about devotees, and I don't really want to get affected to think like that. Matter of fact, my experience is quite different in Krishna consciousness. I find the devotees, of course there's harsh people, but I find them actually very loving. I think many of you I've known for 2 weeks, but I feel like if I, you know, showed up at your temple, you'd probably, you know, take care of me. If you were a householder, you may even put me up for the night in your place. We've only known each other. I think it's quite wonderful in Krishna consciousness. But I also didn't feel that this was the time for me to express that to him. Because, remember we had the, we own a problem, they own a problem, and there's a no problem area in between? So I felt he was in the top part. He owns a problem. And it wasn't the time really for me to express my difference of opinion, to kind of like preach to him or get him to see another side of it. At another time, I was thinking, at another time I could do that when he's not, when these feelings have subsided, because emotions are transient often. And when we're in a different realm, then I can say, you remember that other day we were talking, you know, I was thinking about it, and actually I have a whole different outlook on it. Now, that would be in my circle of influence then. But now my only circle of influence, I felt, was to give him an ear and to actually have him feel that I was, and I was listening. But I just didn't want to, with Robert I could actually think and feel. I could feel the way he was feeling, or try to, because it was, you know, there was nothing I felt was going to affect my consciousness or anything. You know, it would just help him more. But with this other person, I didn't really want to exactly feel the way he felt. Is that kind of clear? Okay, now, let's, who wants to have a problem? Someone just read off their problem. We're not going to go through the whole thing for here, but as a group, we'll just try to come up with a response. Someone raise their hands and read their problem. Do you have one?
Every morning, when I'm turning my round, someone... they take up too much of my time, especially during japa, and it ruins the rest of my day.
Did you hear that? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay, so I went up to myself, hey, Vrindavan, you're really looking... looks like it's been a tough morning, huh? And then he says that. Okay, so... what do you think his emotion was? You can look at your list on page 24 if you like. Mataji? Frustration. Okay. Let's see. I think frustration's a pretty good one. Yeah, it's better than bewilderment, isn't it? Okay. And what's the cause? Can't finish his rounds. Now, one thing, we're going into more of the details tomorrow, but sometimes as they come up, I'll bring them up. We don't want to sound like a parrot, right? We want to paraphrase what, because they often give us the cause of the emotion. So we don't want to exactly say the same words, but it's even better if we can just paraphrase it a little bit. Okay, so he can't, people are interrupting him and he can't finish his job. Can we get to say?
Yeah, so it seems like you have a problem to tell them directly that they shouldn't disturb you. See, that is his problem. If you could tell them, you would let them change up.
Yeah, okay. That's maybe that I might save that for the second round of conversation. Yes.
I could do that, but I don't want to.
Right, you see, this is the kind of, you see, you were giving, okay, actually just become clear now. You were giving him an answer. You were giving him a solution. You see, this comes up sometimes. What we do is we're using the words of active listening, but we're actually manipulating. And we're giving an answer, but it's in the disguise of active listening. We'll talk about that more. Good, I'm glad you made it, I'm glad you blew it there. Okay, so we may say something like, "Wow, really? Let's get it now. It really sound. You really seem frustrated that so many people are bothering you. You can't get your own time. Now, how do you feel when I say that?
I feel like you appreciate.
How does that sound? How would that compare to say, Vrindavan, you know, how long have you been a devotee? Just kind of work it out. If I were you, I would just, I had the same problem actually when I was teaching Rupal, and I just got up at 1 in the morning and finished my japa. No, it's not that hard, really. If you can go to sleep at 8, right? 8 to 1 is 5 hours. And then you have that break, right, from 9:30 to 1. So from 11 to 1, take extra rest. Or if you don't need 7 hours, then take 6.5. Is that alright? Do you have any other thoughts? There's a difference. Okay. Let's hear one more. Try one more. Mataji, do you have one? Any Mataji? Lalita? Come on, just... come on.
Whenever I like my brother, my books, he won't return them.
Her brother doesn't return her books. Okay, so what's her... What's an idea of her emotion? Well, everyone's frustrated these days.
Angry.
Angry? Okay. By the way, disappointment? Anger is an interesting one, by the way. Oftentimes, anger is a secondary emotion. Right? Like, for example, say I saw my son running out in the street. Okay? So, you know, once I run out there and grab him back, you know, I'm really very angry at him. But is anger really the first emotion that I felt?
No, fear.
Anger is often a secondary one, but that's just an interesting aside. Okay, anger, what was the other one? Was anger?
Sense of being cheated.
Okay, oh well, let's find out. We'll try disappointment, and exactly what did you say, Lalita? It sounds like you're a little upset.
Because he never, somebody
says. So it sounds like you're disappointed that he, you know, says one thing and just never follows through with it. You see, I didn't say the exact, I paraphrased it. Okay, how did you feel? It really works. Yes.
It sounds like your brother's a bit of a thief then.
Because, okay, it sounds like your brother's a bit of a thief. Now, is that entering into her? Is that interpreting what she's saying, or is it entering into her frame? What we're trying to do is enter into like her frame of reference and get some confirmation. Now, one of the beauties of this also is if you get the emotion wrong, no problem. It's actually, sometimes it even works better. Not that we should try to, we shouldn't try to. But a person will just correct us. No, I'm not. What word did we use? What was it? Frustrated? Oh, was it frustrated?
Disappointed.
No, I'm not really disappointed. I mean, he's only 14 years old, but, you know, I am a little frustrated because I'm actually in the middle of reading that book. So it also, because people, in general, especially if we're in the modes of passion and ignorance, we can't really think clearly about our feelings. So this also helps a person, in like a matter of seconds, become more clear in their own thinking. Many times, a person doesn't recognize even exactly what the problem is that they're having. Or if they do recognize it, they're a little fearful to come out and say it right away. Therefore, what we call the presenting problem, the first thing that a person presents, often is not the real underlying problem. We give a little example of that on page 28. Okay, let's see. Who's an animated person here? Talk to Simon. Do you have this?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you be Das and I'll be Anu Das. Top of page 28. Go ahead. Put your heart into it.
Krishna Das is the worst tempered friend I've ever had.
You can't talk like that about your authority and God uncle.
Just because I think he's a lousy tempered friend doesn't mean I'm offensive.
If you're going to be such a loser and blame your shortcomings on someone else, why don't you just go to another temple?
This is my favorite temple. I'm not leaving.
Anyway, don't worry. You're probably just tired after the singer tongue. We'll talk about it tomorrow. I'm sure it'll go away. Let's just go take some prasad. Okay, now compare that to this one. Go ahead.
Krishna Das is the worst tempered president I've ever had.
Sounds like you're pretty upset with him.
Yeah, he just isn't sensitive to my needs.
That's frustrating.
Sure is. He just arranged me to go on traveling Sanctum for a whole month with Harry Das. I can't stand it.
You feel helpless that he made an arrangement you don't like.
No, I'm not helpless. I guess I could complain, but that wouldn't be proper. I know how hard it is to make Sanctum arrangements that everyone likes, but I really don't want Harry Das to associate with me.
So you're not upset with Krishna Das. It's really Harry Das that gets on your nerves.
You know what he did? He told Guru Maharaj that I'm not serious about my
son. Obviously this is a little, I just thought this out and typed it out. But it's not too off from what actually happened. So you can see there was a hidden problem. And oftentimes, so he really encoded when he just said, you know, such and such. But if we just take that on its face value, Krishna Das is the worst temple president, and then we just start. We have so little information about what's really going on. See? And especially because people often, when we're frustrated, we want someone to hear us. You see this with children a lot. We overstate something just to get someone's attention. You know, a child will say to his mother, "I hate your guts," you know, something like that. You know, and then 2 minutes later, you know, embrace her, you know. But just to get, it has an unmet need, and just to get her attention. You know, "I'm never coming back to home again," you know, they're 5 years old or something. Okay, questions? I was glad everyone was saying I was going to call Mother Jagatam.
Instead of saying you seem frustrated or it sounds like you're bored or whatever, is it wrong to use the phrase "you must be"?
No, that's okay. It's more British, I think, than American. So that's, I'm just real American. And
well, I took a Catholic course once, and they said that's not good to say.
That's not good.
It's imposing something on them that they may not be feeling.
Well, I was kind of taking it in the sense that sometimes don't we use that "you must be" almost like we would say "it sounds like"?
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on, if we say "you must be," that's a little different than saying, you know. A lot of it also is the intonation of the voice. You know, it's not just what you're saying, it's how you say it, right? Same thing again with the children, right? If you go up to a child and say, "I love you!" And then they start crying. Right? It happens with children all the time. You go,
"You know, you're the biggest fool I've ever met. I'm such a twerp, and I just can't stay in your face."
So a lot of it is how we say it also. You know? Is that all right?
Well, they were saying how important a role language plays.
Yeah, but see, it's difficult in this room because we have people from so many different cultures, and I know that idioms work differently in different countries. Even in Texas and New York, it's the same country, but it's like definitely two different languages.
Maybe it's not the same thing because they were giving the example. This is from Gestalt therapy that you teach your clients, instead of saying "I can't do this," say "I don't want to do this."
Right, right. It's like the difference between haves and bees, right? They say that people who work in their circle of concern, they say, you know, "I have to do this," you know, right? But a person who works in their circle of influence will say something, "I've chose to be like this," right? "I can be like that." You know, so I haven't thought about it deeply, obviously, what you just said. I just made a quick response, but so I don't claim to be as expert as they are in that. But it just seems that if you say it the right way, it wouldn't have too much of an effect. But just as you see here in this second discussion between Anudas and Das, it's not that every single time someone responds, it's going to be very unnatural to keep on saying "it seems like," "it sounds like," "it seems like," "it sounds like." Sometimes just that's frustrating. And often just, what we'll do is those four, we'll just mix them, use any of those four as we see fit. And mix them up. It's not going to be natural. It takes some practice to get natural. I might as well bring up that point now. This, you see, because I really, it was funny, when I was talking to that devotee yesterday, I was thinking that I don't see the movement as like that, but even if it is like that, you know, I'm not going to worry about the entire movement, but here I have 45 devotees listening to this class, so my circle of influence right now is here. And if I could actually, you know, I want to try to get you to instill in yourself a real desire to learn this. And it's something that you're going to have to practice outside of these 2 weeks to really get down. It takes 2 or 3 weeks of consciously making an effort in your daily conversations and practicing it to actually master it. It's all it takes. And it's something you'll have the rest of your life. So we'll talk about it. It'll be part of your homework assignment today and for the rest of the semester. But it's really a very powerful technique. And then when you learn it, you can teach others. And then from this 45, it can you know, help. Because I think it can help society. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here doing it. Yes?
Now we need that. We understood what it was a problem, you know, and he confirmed. But then, you know, we don't. how are we going to help? Are we going to give advice, or is he going to find his mentor?
Okay. I talk about that little bottom of page 28 where it says no one to stop, and I say that most often it will be you who will have to end the conversation. It's a rare opportunity for most people to be really heard and understood, and that's my experience. Often when I say that, he'll say, our Vrindavan might have said, ever since I've taken up the service. And he goes on from there.
You don't ask him what's the solution, what he thinks is the solution.
Generally, you'll find that I wanted to break up into groups today and start practicing amongst themselves. We're not going to be able to do that. We'll start doing that tomorrow. Because I think the experience is, and anyone, once you get a little used to it, is that it just naturally, by this, they usually want to say something else.
We didn't finish with him, though.
What?
We didn't finish with
him. Oh, we didn't finish at all. All we said, maybe I didn't make that clear. All we're doing right now is working on initial responses.
Oh.
These could be, 1 hour conversations. That Prabhu I spoke to yesterday must have spoke for about a half hour. And I guess I probably responded like this about 3 times. And the rest of the time was just, nonverbal or, just little acknowledgements. And
Even though you disagreed, you just gave it to yourself.
Because he really owned the problem at that time. So it wasn't going to be the proper time. No. It wasn't the proper time for that to take place.
You will find the solution by yourself.
Maybe he'll find the solution by himself. Maybe he'll come and talk. Already, you see, this is a building relationship that I've had with him over about a month now, where I've had several nice conversations with him, and he's thinking of staying here. So I'd like to have he's a equal in Krishna consciousness to me, so I'd actually like to develop friendship with him also. So, but it's not, again, it's just another block, a building block. It's not that he came up with a great solution. He may have thought about it, because I think he thought about things as we were going, and things became clearer to him as the conversation went on. Mahaprabhu.
Who owns the problem? Actually, the people who are responsible for certain things, everything finally rests on them. Somebody is not chanting, then that's their problem. Somebody is not doing work properly, if family is not behaving properly, if wife is not doing that, the whole world actually is his problem. So, how to understand it? Put in the second tier, first category, bottom category, and middle category. Only one problem.
If the whole world, you mean the leader's problem? If he does it, he goes nuts.
That's the problem.
So therefore, he shouldn't take on other people's problems. He has to make a very clear distinction. Is this tangibly and concretely affect me or not? And this way, just like what does it say in Sri Yuga Upanishad, you can go on living for thousands of years like this, karma, that verse, right? So one can be a manager for decades if one has this kind of mentality. And otherwise, we see so many casualties of managers in our movement. And a lot of it is for this reason. Trying to exert power where they don't have the power to exert it. Not that we're not concerned, but we have to learn the best way to use our concern. Right. For example, with that person who wasn't chanting his rounds and his temple president, Prabhupada just didn't get him in his room and just chant your rounds. I guess he could have. It's an individual. This person, Prabhupada chose another technique. He kept him in his position and tried to encourage him in other ways. So even the spiritual master, if the disciple's not surrendered, what power does he have? Right? What can the parent do? The parent can give all the love, but if the child goes off. Not that we neglect them, but we have to learn the best way to help them. And also they have that saying in the West, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You know that? So really, what real Krishna consciousness is when we, as devotees, and the people that we're trying to help, come to Krishna consciousness, internalize our commitment. Not that the commitment's coming just down from above, but actually we're accepting it and we want everything based on desire, right? Even in the higher stages of tatchaloyam ekamulyam, right? The Krishna consciousness based on the desire. So the expert teacher, the expert preacher, knows how to turn up that desire. This is one. And several presidents, you can't demand it. We can demand cooperation. And I think this is a very important topic, by the way, to understand. The difference between cooperation and surrender. I think sometimes we misunderstand this also. We have to cooperate, say, with our Krishna consciousness story, so we want to spread to the Prabhupada's movement. But a president can't, for example, can't demand surrender. Surrender means you take your heart and you place it at the Buddha's feet. Right? And you can't demand that. You have to command that. It's not a thing just because it comes with a position. Now, it is the other side of it is in ISKCON these days. In the old days, just because someone was a town president of sannyasi, there was a certain amount of respect that we just naturally gave them for the position, and that's Vedic. That's part of culture. Nowadays, you know, you're the town president. And, you know, not only do people not, but you have to prove to Bhakti so-and-so and Bhakti so-and-so, you have to prove that you're worthy to every single person before they even can give that much respect. So that kind of distrust is really part of the Western mentality. But still, this difference between surrender and cooperation, it's a little off the subject again, but I think it's a very important distinction to make. Is that all right? Am I saying anything? Any thunderbolts coming? Michael?
I'm trying to understand the two public sessions you gave as examples, one in fact, one in fact, they were different because you couldn't put yourself in their situation. So it wasn't.
I didn't feel it was healthy to my Krishna consciousness to fully empathize with that person. Because he was. If I really took on his understanding of ISKCON as full of, you know, people who, you know, backfight and this and that, I don't think it would be helpful for my surrender to Krishna. Right, so I didn't want to, just like we say in the last page, we don't want to empathize with a blasphemer. Well, really, you really think Srila Prabhupada is a such and such? Oh, really? Can you explain to me? Oh, we're going to punch the guy with that? Right? You know, what I need to say is that there's certain limitations.
So how does that change you at the distance?
Well, this wasn't a heavy thing. He wasn't, you know, blaspheming anyone. He was just talking in general. So I didn't mind at all talking to the guy. Okay? But if someone actually is going to start, or say they're going to start, you know, they come up to you and they're having problems with the regulative principles, well, so I'll listen to them. But then when they start, you know, explaining in detail what they did last Saturday night, you know, and I was like, well, you know, actually, you know, this kind of goes beyond my limit. I really don't want to hear the details of, you know, your fall downs. Okay, because we should understand that those create impressions. But a kind of more general active listening is fine with everyone. But when we're starting to, you know, when we're, especially as we become a little more senior in the society and people come to us for shelter, we have to make sure that we're really, we have to really be strong in our own Krishna consciousness. Some really good people. You know, and until then, and even when we are, we should be careful of our own devotional people. Like when Mother Rohini was asking that point, you know, when does it, that's when the Shastra kind of comes in. You know? Gramya Katana Sunibe, Gramya Katana, right? Don't hear village talk, don't speak.
From what I learned from those two conversations that you used, with Dr. Robert, it's required a solution that your exam is Swedish. I think we have to listen to train ourselves not to search for a solution, because quite often it's not necessary to solve someone else's problem. You know, we're not a problem solver.
Well, we can be when someone, they say in counseling, they have this saying, don't counsel until you've been hired. Right? So he actually hired me right from the beginning.
And if he had just said probably two or three sentences of his situation, I had a very kind-hearted way said, I think you should drop the course, but any other questions? He probably would have been satisfied with that, because actually he came to me in that mood, right? But still I chose to act and listen, just to make sure I fully understood his needs, to give him the right advice. And it possibly could have turned out that there was something. You know, I could have found out that actually he wanted to just stay in Vrindavan the rest of his life and not go back to the temple. You know, I might have come up, you never know. Right? Right. You'll also often find that as you're active listening, the person wasn't going to ask your counsel at first. But then as the relationship, they say, oh, this person's really, it's an amazing experience. For people who actually, who haven't been heard for years sometimes, to be heard. Okay, Ravi Gripper's going to kill me. Homework for tonight. If it arises, try to active listen to someone. Okay? Try it out. If it arises in some kind of conversation. I would say at least in 75% of our cases it will. And then I want you to do one other experiment. Okay? For 5 minutes, you can time yourself, for 5 minutes, think about this principle, the circle of influence and the circle of concern. Just put everything else aside, sit in the fireplace, and just think about it. Okay, and write down any realizations that come to you. And since we should keep Krishna consciousness in the viewpoint, what I want you to do, because I think this is a great exercise to do time to time, spend 5 more minutes, okay, I'm only asking 5 minutes, and deeply meditate on the concept of samsara and reincarnation. Really think about it and how it affects you. You know, sometimes we take it as like ABCs and we're like, of course we know. Really think about it and think about who we are, we're spiritual, etc. Okay, so that's 10 minutes of work there. And if you get in the conversation, and if you haven't done the reading, do the reading.
But do you have the first...
It's your problem.
Sorry, do you have the first...
My problem.
Did you bring any of the...
Yes, first one. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.